We probably all made this statement before. I'll believe it when I see it with my own eyes. Or seeing is believing. And there's some, you know, there's like this connection between if I see something, I can believe it. And if you think about it, there's a lot of things in life that are important to us that we can't see at all. We can't actually see love. We can't see hope. We can't see faith. And we can't see God. I mean, none of us in this room saw Jesus with our own eyes. And yet there were some people that did. There were some people that saw him. They saw the way he treated people. And they saw the miracles that he did. And they were an eyewitness to Easter, the first Easter, the resurrection. They saw it with their own eyes. And they wrote down their story so later other people could decide what they want to believe about Jesus. It's the big idea on this Easter Sunday. Grab your note sheet and write in, what do you believe about Jesus? And even Jesus wondered what people were thinking about him. And it's sort of like now, a lot of people are thinking, well, he's a good person, he's a special person, and it was the same thing back then. He asks his followers, who do people say that I am? And of course, the people that were close to him and they saw all these different things, they were the eyewitnesses of it, they begin to decide that he's special, he's different than everybody else. There's nobody like him. And when he asks his followers, he says, who do you say I am? You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And so, you know, people are starting to see, like, well, Jesus is way different. He says different things. He does different things. And the followers are saying, you know, he's not even a person. He's God. And yet it was on Easter weekend that all of that got really murky and confusing. Because even those closest to him didn't expect the cross. And then when they saw Jesus on the cross, it really messed with their head because, you know, believing and seeing, believing and seeing, believing and seeing. So they believed something and then they saw something that didn't match it. Now, you can't blame them. I mean, can you imagine if just any of us, just regular people, you know, someone, you know, we're shopping at Target and someone gets us, says, come on, you got to see something. We found God, and they take you out to a field, like a dump area, and there's a tree out there. It looks like a cross, and as they get you closer, there's a man hanging there. He's naked. He looks like terribly beat up and bloody, and they turn to you and say, there's our God. And you're like, what? I mean, it messed with their head. They believed one thing because they saw one thing, and now they're not sure what to believe. And then when the powers to be, you know, put out their press release, I'll read it to you, it's not in your notes, the leading priests and teachers of the religious law also mocked Jesus. He saved others, they said. He can't save himself. Let this Christ, this King of Israel, come down from the cross that we may see and believe. And they're asking him to do the one thing that he'll never do so they can believe. Because God will never quit because it's too difficult. He'll never quit because it's too embarrassing. He won't quit because it's too frustrating. There is definitely one thing Jesus is not going to do. He is not going to quit and come down off that cross. Because it's the statement. The cross is the huge statement that God's willing to do anything and everything he can do to make a way for us to have a relationship with him. And you may think this, I remember thinking this, you know, before I ever really even started to walk, which is like, what is this thing? I see people wearing crosses. What's so big about the cross? Let me give you an analogy. Let's say that my family some of my family members come and ask me to house sit for the weekend, and they want me to watch their dog. Uncle Robin, please, you know. And I know the dog, he's like a, you know, family member to them, just like a lot of us have our animals. And, you know, so I decide, okay, I'm going to go over there and watch the dog for the weekend. I'm going to house sit. And I go over to their house, you know, and everything's going great, you know. And then, you know, the last day before they get home, I go out in the yard, and there's neighbors out there, and, you know, I bring the dog out, and the dog is running around. And I start talking to the neighbor about the Jazz playoff game, you know. I'm just like, I can't even believe it. Like, you know, we're talking about the Jazz and the playoffs, and I'm kind of watching the dog out of the corner of my eye. It's okay, because they live on a cul-de-sac, and we start talking about now the disagreement, and we're sort of talking back and forth and lose track, and then I hear the brakes squeal. And I look up just in time to see it. Like the car just smashes into the dog and kills it. And I'm instantly like, oh, you know, just guilt immediately. Like, oh, how could I, oh no. Like, how could I have done that? Like, that was my one job. I'm thinking about, like, how am I going to tell them when they come back, you know? And I could just see their faces, and sure enough, they come home, and I have to tell them. It's like, I totally screwed up. I wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry. And, the dog is dead. And sure, they're going to cry. I mean, it's going to be hard on them, and they don't know what to say, and it's awkward. And, you know, they do their best to say, oh, mistakes happen. But you can feel the tension. And, you know, for me, like, every time I see them again after that, it's like I can hear the brakes squeal again. You know, I can hear the screech, and it's like it all just comes up again. I feel guilty, like, how could I be so stupid? Like, why did I do that, you know? And it's like awkward. I want to keep my distance from them. Every time I'm around them, it's just tough. The relationship is not the same. It's like, how does this, like, fit lacrosse? Well, here it is. So they call me up one time and they say, hey, come on over to the house. We're going to have a barbecue. And they just invite me. And I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to go. I just always feel so bad when I'm around them. And I finally decide, I'm going to go, you know. So I go over there and I get out of the car. I don't even get to the front door, and the kids come running out, and they got this puppy in their arms, like, Uncle Robin, Uncle Robin, look at our new dog, Uncle Robin, look at our new dog. You know, and they put it on the ground, and it runs around. And the first thing I'm thinking is like, yeah, right, you know, you wouldn't have to get a new dog if it wasn't for the stupid thing that I did. Look at him, you know, and they're playing with him. And they scoop him up and say, Uncle Robin, you want to know what we named him? You want to know what we named him, Uncle Robin? We named him Robin. And I'm like, what? Even my name? Well, no, wait, I'm the one that did the big screw up. No, we named him. Look at him. Look at Robin. Look at him. And all of a sudden, the guilt comes off and the shame goes away. And I realized that it wasn't something I was going to be able to do something about, but they could. And that's the cross. It was something God knew he had to do. If it was going to be right between us, he had to do something. And that's why it's a big deal. You know, and that happened on Friday, and then there's Saturday, and then there's Easter Sunday, the resurrection. And the resurrection is super important, because if the resurrection happens and Jesus is alive, it means we can have a relationship with him. So you have cross and resurrection. Now, here's the three questions we're going to look at today, and everybody's kind of a different place. So number one, write your notes. Do I believe Jesus is alive? And, you know, the story doesn't get just murky. It gets so confusing that even though they saw certain things about Jesus, everybody decided that he was dead and not coming back, like dead. You know, nobody goes to a funeral and they're like sort of got this quiet joy inside, because any minute they know that the person's going to like come back alive and everything's going to be okay. And that's where everybody was at. Now, on Sunday morning, Jesus dies on Friday. There's Saturday, Sunday morning, a group of women go, and they're going to pay their respects at the gravesite, at this cave, a tomb that they'd put Jesus in. And so they all arrive over there, and when they get there, they see an angel. Here's what the angel said to them. Why are you looking among the dead for someone who's alive? He isn't here. He's risen from the dead. Can you imagine how that would like be? And of course, I'm sure they wanted to brush it off at first, but then somebody must have said, but it's an angel talking. Do you know God will, he'll do anything to set us up to win and believe. I mean, he goes to the greatest, I mean, he sends a messenger from God to tell them, to give them the best chance they can get to believe. I mean, no matter how crazy it sounds, at least they have to acknowledge the fact that they're standing with an angel and he's the one saying it. If you're having trouble believing in Jesus, that he's alive, God's going to do anything and everything he can to convince you. He'll give you your best shot. And it must have worked because they run home and they tell the other people that, you know, these other followers, and I'm just going to read it to you. It'll come up on the screen. When they came back from the grave, they told all these things to the 11 followers and to all the others. They were like Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary, the mother of James. Other women who were with them told these things to the followers also. But they did not believe the women because their words seemed like nonsense. I understand the problem. Have you ever had anybody in your life that had a lot of credibility and they were very believable, but they asked you to believe something that was unbelievable? And this tension develops because you're like, this is not a crackpot. I mean, I know them. You may know someone and they know Jesus and they believe Jesus is alive, and they say, I think he's alive. He rose from the dead. And you're like, how can you say that? But they have credibility because to you, they're a believable person. But they're saying something unbelievable. And they just can't wrap their head around it. Like, no, this is nonsense. Or I'm not getting my hopes up. There's no way. I know you're the type of person that I should believe, but I just can't. And there's the question, you know, do I believe Jesus is alive? I took this little piece of an interview that Bono did about this whole thing of Jesus, is he alive? Can we have a relationship with him? And I want to check out this take that he has, so check this out.
I look to the scriptures for poetic truth, as well as the sort of historical stuff I'm interested in. And of course, there was a historical Jesus.
No, I'm talking about God.
Oh, right. The person of Christ is my way to understand God.
Do you pray?
Yes.
To whom or what do you pray?
To Christ.
What way? To Christ.
Yeah.
And what do you pray for?
I pray to get to know the will of God, because then the prayers have more chance of coming true. I mean, that's the thing about prayer, isn't it? I mean, we don't do it in a very lofty way in our family. There's just a bunch of us on the bed, usually. We have a very big bed in our house, and all our... We've prayed with all our kids. We read the scriptures, we pray. It's not even regular. Sometimes if we go to church on a Sunday, we go when the church has ended and we'll just go in on our own as a family.
For peace and quiet.
For peace and quiet. And we'll pray, usually about people that we know who are struggling with something, illness or whatever.
So then, what or who was Jesus as far as you're concerned?
I think it's a defining question for a Christian, is who was Christ. And I don't think you're let off easily by saying a great thinker or a great philosopher or because actually he went round saying he was the Messiah. That's why he was crucified. He was crucified because he said he was the Son of God. So he either, in my view, was the Son of God or he was
not.
No, nuts.
Nuts, yes.
Forget
yes.
Rock and roll messianic complexes. This is like, I mean, Charlie Manson type delirium. And I find it hard to accept that all the millions and millions of lives, half the earth for 2,000 years, have been touched, have felt their lives touched and inspired by some nutter. I don't believe it.
Therefore it follows that you believe he was divine.
Yes.
And therefore it follows that you believe that he rose physically from the dead.
Yes, yeah. I have no problem with miracles. I'm living around them. I am one.
So when you pray then, you pray to Jesus.
Yes.
The risen Jesus.
Yes.
And you believe that he made promises which will come true.
Yes. I do.
Yeah, and it's just not a big famous person that can believe that. That's the question that hangs in the air, because if Jesus is alive, it means we can have a relationship with him. That's a huge turning point in the whole thing. If he's alive, then we can have a relationship with him. Now, question number two, write in your notes this, should I trust him? So the first one we start out is like, do I even believe he's alive at all? I mean, you know, I know someone died on the cross, is he alive? And then if I do believe he's alive, then should I trust him? Now, the story goes on. You know, they think that these women have said this nonsense thing. Let me read you a little bit more. Some of it's in your notes. The day was Sunday, and the same evening the followers were together. They had the doors locked because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders. Suddenly, Jesus was standing there among them. He said, "Peace be with you." As soon as he said this, he showed them his hands and his side. When the followers saw the Lord, they were happy. Again, Jesus said, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, that I'm sending you." Now, there's a reason why when Jesus shows up, he says, chill. He's like, everybody calm down. Because, I mean, they're really happy, but there would be a lot of emotions stirred into these men. For one thing, they have to admit that the women were right. And that's not easy for a room full of men. So right off the bat, you know, they got to admit the women were right about this, you know, like and then here's the thing too, they have to admit that they were wrong about God, which isn't easy to do either. So there's a lot of emotions going on inside of them. But here's the biggest one: when the religious leaders took a hold of Jesus and they were going to stamp out this movement, they also wanted to round up all the followers. I mean, they're going to take everybody, Jesus and everybody that's following him. So they try to track these guys down. And the way they escape is to lie. They say that they never knew him. Now, they had been with him 3 years, day and night, day and night, day and night. And when they're confronted, say, "Do you know Jesus? Are you one of his followers? Are you with him?" Every single one of them say, "No, I don't know him. I didn't get mixed up with him. Don't mix me up with what he's doing, what he's about." And Jesus knows that. So he shows up, and the first thing he says is, "Settle down. Chill." Do you think God's mad at you for anything? Does anybody here think that Jesus has a score to settle with you? I mean, if there was ever a chance for someone to say, "I told you so." You know that wonderful feeling when you lecture someone, you tell them exactly what they should do, and you tell them exactly how they should act, and you tell them this is what you should do, and this is what's going to happen if you don't do it, and they completely blow you off, and then it happens just like you said. You know how great it feels when you get to say, "I told you so." And yet he doesn't do it. Instead, he says, "Just chill out. I haven't come to scold you." Do you know why a lot of people can't trust Jesus? It's because they think that Jesus has a score to settle with them first. So they can't trust him because they feel like God's mad at me about something. And in this story, it's almost like he reinstates him. He says, you are my team to take the message out, and you're still my team. I'm sure they thought, you know, we quit the team, Lord. And he's saying, yeah, but I didn't quit you. It's hard to trust God when you're waiting for your punishment or your consequences. And Jesus shows up, and he doesn't even say anything about their past. Isn't it nice to know that no matter what I've done in my past, I'm not disqualified from the future that God has for me? You go through a divorce and it breaks up the family and it hurts people and it's very, very painful. But listen, it doesn't mean that your next marriage can't be happy and healthy and blessed. You tell lies, you cheat, there's things in my past. It doesn't mean that it disqualifies me from what God has for me. Jesus shows up and says, "Chill out, listen to me. We're going forward." And here's why. I know the things I've done in my past, and so do you. Do you need to be reminded? God knows what I've done in my past. He says, "Let's go forward," and here's why. the best way of dealing with my past. It's like he's saying, yes, there's going to be some things we're going to have to deal with in your past, but the best way to deal with it is as we go forward into the future. So many people go back into their past and they get stuck there and they never get away. There's no hope there. He says to him, he says, listen, we'll have some things to work through and we'll do it on the way to a better future. Can you trust Jesus regardless of your past? Because that's the question. Should I trust him? Or is he going to settle that score first? Now, question number three, right in your notes. Do I believe I should follow him? Should I follow him? And there's one guy left I want to talk about. He's, he was part of the original group that got started. And I'm going to read you his story right here. Thomas Didymus, one of the 12, but he was not with the other followers when they came to Jesus. So you maybe have heard of this guy. He's famous through history. They call him Doubting Thomas. Here's the guy right here. They told him, we saw the Lord. Thomas said, that's hard to believe. I'll have to see the nail holes in his hands, put my finger where the nails were, and put my hand into his side. Only then will I believe it. A week later, the followers were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. The doors were locked, but Jesus came in and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Then he said to Thomas, put your finger here. Look at my hands. Put your hand here in my side. Stop doubting and believe. Thomas said to Jesus, my Lord and my God. It's like all three questions start emerging, you know. Do I believe he's alive? Should I trust him? Should I follow him? And Thomas, we all know people like this. Maybe you're like one of these type of people. Like when Thomas goes through a hard time, he just gets harder. Like Thomas is the type that what he's done is pulled back from everybody. He's one of the type of people that says, oh, it's really not that big of a deal. I'll get through it. I'll be fine. I mean, he doesn't even stay with the other people. He's just like, you know, there's work to be done. The best thing to do is get back up on the horse after you get bucked out. I got to get moving. You know, it was cool and everything, but it didn't work out. You know, I'm going to be fine. You know, those type of guys. And then a week goes by and he can't hold up. He can't pull it off. He can't process it by himself. He just hits something in his life. It's just too much this time. I just can't be the guy that can just get through everything. So he goes back and he joins everybody else. He's like, the only thing I know to do, I don't know what we're going to do, but whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to do it with these people. So he goes back and he joins them. He's missed out on everything that's happened. And when you isolate and you decide, I'll just get through it by myself, you can miss out on a lot of stuff. And some of it you need. He pulls back, he's by himself, and now he's with everybody else, and they're all together, and Jesus shows up in the room, he says the same thing to him, he goes, hold up, and then he starts talking to Thomas. And I'm sure it was difficult. Thomas is the type of person that is most comfortable when he's earning the good things that happen in his life. He's really comfortable with the religion. The more you do and the harder you work, the more God loves you. He's a worker type person. He's comfortable when he can control things by effort. And Thomas has a difficult time with the concept of grace. He really does. And Jesus shows up and he tells him to just be quiet for a second. And then he does something that's interesting. As you read it, like, can you imagine Jesus being willing to meet Thomas on his terms? I mean, think about it for a moment. Who in your life needs to hear that? Because normally it's the other way around. All the things we have to do, God puts out the terms. These are the things. I guess Jesus could have shown up and said, okay, Thomas, listen, I'm going to take you back, but here's the terms and conditions this time. Here's the contract. And he doesn't. Thomas makes the bold statements. He says, these are the things I'm going to have to see. And you would think that any good, self-respecting God would have said, yeah, right. It's like, did you forget who God is? You don't tell me what to do. ask a question, I never ask you to raise your hands, but just ask your heart, have you ever bossed God around? Told him, this is what you're going to have to do, and then later felt like, oh, Thomas does it. He tells Jesus, this is exactly what you'll have to do if you're going to win my heart. And Jesus shows up and says, Thomas, if that's what you need, come do it. Do you see God as someone that would approach you on your terms? He does it in this story. And it's interesting that someone could be so emphatic and like, this is what's going to have to happen. I'm going to have to touch him. And in the story, when Thomas says, my Lord and my God, he never touches Jesus. The very thing he said he had to do. These are my terms, God. Maybe you've had this happen before, like you've told somebody, you've told God, you know, this is what I'm going to have you do. You're going to have to do these things. And then God starts to do it, and you realize you didn't really need him as badly as you thought you did. Here's Thomas, and all of a sudden, like, he starts to move towards Jesus. Jesus does exactly what he says, and he realizes he doesn't need it. He just needed to know how much Jesus cared. Cared enough to meet him on his terms. He says, my Lord and my God. Do you know, once you get that God cares about you, you don't care about terms and conditions. You're ready to follow. Now, this next part is where we get to be a part of the story. Jesus said to him, Thomas, because you have seen me, you believe. Those who are happy who have never seen me yet believe. And that's what he's talking about. Every single person, he's saying to all the guys, he's saying, listen, we're being reinstated. We're going to take the message out here. And here's the good news. I did something special for everybody here so they could believe. I sent an angel, and I came in here, and I told you guys, you're part of the team again. I'm not going to hold your past against you. And Thomas, I met your terms and conditions. Like, whatever needs to be done to cause people to believe in me, I'm willing to do. That's the message. That's what he says to me. He says, you guys should be happy because I'm going to do whatever it takes for people to believe. So if there's anybody in your life and you've ever wondered, or you're stuck today and you're like, am I ever going to believe? Just know. Jesus said, I'm going to find a way. Now here's the bottom line, and write it in your notes. Everyone is invited to believe. And there's this part of the Bible that's behind it, and I wanted to show you. It's like an invitation, really, and maybe you've seen this at a sporting event before. You've seen this up in the crowd. That's a part. Someone actually heard Jesus say that, and they put it out all over the place. But here's what that is. I'll read it to you. Yes, God loved the world so much that he gave his only son so that everyone who believes in him would not be lost but have eternal life. That's the invitation, and we accept it by believing.